Hour number three of 3D here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Darren McFarland and Willie Donick here with you on this Tuesday afternoon. Hope everybody's having a great day. D-Mace will be back in the saddle with us tomorrow. Tonight it's the Predators and the Avalanche. A little one-game homestand. Had a one-game road trip in Chicago on Saturday. This will be a one-game homestand before back out on the road Thursday and Saturday. Be back in the Eastern Conference again. And remember, Saturday morning. It's strange to say that, but a Saturday morning drop of the puck, 11:30 Central Time. We'll have pregame starting at 10:30, and hopefully I will have a buffet set up in studio because I think it's only appropriate that we have breakfast on Saturday morning before pregame. We're now
more of a brunch, don't you think? Could be a brunch.
Brunch is fine. Yeah. Both are appropriate.
And we will not be staying for the Knicks game, which is later that day in Madison.
Oh, they're doing a little double dip.
Well, that's why the game is that early.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a double dip.
I think I'm okay with early games.
Okay.
I guess we'll find out how the coach feels about that and how the coaches and players feel about an early, because that is different. So let's bring in Kevin McCarthy. He now joins us. Coach, how you doing?
Very good, thank you.
So how do you adjust? Because, yeah, and I know that there are earlier games in the schedule. We've seen maybe a 2 o'clock start, but 11:30 Central Time, it'll be 12:30 where you're at. That is rearranging your schedule. Do you take any measures whatsoever to kind of get everybody's body? Because they were talking about Mike Mularkey had a practice over the weekend at night just to get them used to their bodies playing at night because it's different.
Maybe if there was like we're starting in Philadelphia for that trip there too, so we'll be you know by that point pretty accustomed to the Eastern time, and you know players I think enjoy those afternoon games, 12:30, 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock. I know guys get a chance to sleep in a bit. They get a chance to focus on the game a little bit longer. And I think that a lot of times you're not wasting any energy. You know, obviously the pregame skate in the morning, you come back and play at night. So I think from an energy standpoint, I enjoy those games.
I don't have the matinee record in front of me last year, but I, off the top of my head, I believe it was your friend. I believe you guys did all right in matinee hockey last season.
Well, the biggest thing obviously is the focus that the players have to have, because you know you're like Lavi says all the time, you go from eating eggs at 10 o'clock in the morning to get into a fist fight maybe. So you got to be ready to play. And I think we've got a good group of guys that prepare themselves well. So, I don't think that's going to be an issue.
Have you noticed at all, and I know it's a small sample, but have you noticed teams taking a different approach with you guys, maybe as opposed to last season because of what happened?
Oh, definitely. I think that any time, we were in the same position. When you're playing a team that went to the Stanley Cup Finals or a team that won the Cup, there's no easy games. Those teams are using you as a benchmark regardless of where you are, in the season. So, you're not going to be able to sneak into a building and sneak out anymore, obviously, and especially with the situation that we created last year for ourselves and in a good way. You have that target on your back now. Teams are going to sit back and they're going to measure how they are by how they play against you. And that's a good thing because it's going to make you play your best hockey. As the season goes on, it'll make you better quicker.
You've been with Lavi for a long time. You've been here now for a while. So you understand the rigors of a long NHL season and then the next chapter in the playoffs, because it's a different season. The next season, I guess, is called playoffs. Do you ever get – like, let's just use last year as a good gauge. Did you ever at any point you guys get in a room, you guys being the coaches – and feel like something special was burning, or is it impossible to figure that out in the course of a season? Was there any point where you go, you know what, I feel like this can come together. There's something good here happening, even though you guys went in as the last team.
Well, I think the last part of the season, I really liked the way we were playing. I mean, as a group, the guys had bought into how we needed the play to be successful. As we approached the playoffs, we felt as a group, and you could feel it in the room, you could feel it by talking to the players, that they all knew that they had this quiet confidence about them. When we went up against Chicago in that first round, there wasn't anybody in that room that was sitting back going, oh no, we're playing the Chicago Blackhawks. We all felt that if we played our game, that we could beat them, we had that type of confidence. And it was a lot of it was based on how we were playing at that point in the season. The previous meetings that we had against Chicago in the playoffs obviously helped us, you know, being in that position to come in and know that we could have success.
I spoke with PK Subban after skate this morning, and I asked him about going through the injuries with the D core last year, and he missed a bunch of games. He missed, I think, 16 games. Ellis missed about a dozen. Roman missed about a dozen. You guys missed, I think it was almost 50 games with not having your core together. I asked him if that maybe helped him with how you guys are having to adjust this season. I won't tell his answer because you can hear it tonight on pregame. I'll ask you the same question. Do you believe that going through that last year and here you are going through it again, is that maybe helped you out of the gates having to learn the adjustments? Playing with different pairings.
Yeah, definitely. I think that, you know, knowing that we had guys put in those positions last year, a guy like Matty Irwin that went up and played the right side, and you know, with Yost, he went up there and played the right side when Ellie was hurt. So there's certain guys that put in that roles last year. So this year when it did happen, you know, it was very comfortable for us as a staff to be able to make those adjustments. And we've always said that, we've got 8 NHL defensemen, you know, that on our roster that we feel comfortable with playing every night. And, you know, obviously when our top four are healthy, there's not a better top four in the league. And, you know, so it kind of takes away from those other four defensemen sometimes as to how good they really are. And we've got complete confidence in our lineup. And whatever 6D we play, we have confidence that they can do the job.
Predators associate coach Kevin McCarthy is with us here on 3D. And Kevin, you were a defenseman yourself, and I was just looking. There was a nice piece that NHL.com did on Hal Gill, and we've heard his perspective a lot on just the evolution of what a defender has to do depending on the direction the game is going. The game is always evolving. Sometimes it goes in cycles. What you were doing may not work 1 year, might come back a few years down the road. But how do you try to do that? How does your playing experience help you with this year's uniqueness? Because right now we're in a fresh set of rules now that everybody's still adjusting to.
Well, I think the biggest thing is being an ex-player, I think a lot of times, you know, I can feel that the emotions that these players are going through during a game, you know, before a game, after a game, being able to say the right thing at the right time to these players when they come off the ice. And, you know, there's certain times that, you know, a player, you don't even have to talk to them. They know exactly what they did, right or wrong. And I always try to use a phrase that I was taught in the, you know, try to, you know, that coachable moment, you know, catch them when they're doing something right and reinforce it, you know, and because too many times you're always talking to them after they make a mistake. So I always try to catch those moments when they've done exactly what we wanted them to do and make sure that they understand that that's exactly what we're looking for. So, and reinforce those situations. And, you know, the defensemen of today's game, I mean, it's all about skating. You know, back when I played, you know, there was your offensive defenseman and but for the most part, most of those guys were you always had your two or three big defensemen that were physical, and that was their job. And nowadays, it's you look at the successful teams that have those six defensemen that can all play and all skate and be able to their puck skills are so important now, and you don't have those big lumbering guys now that are one dimensional players.
One of the things that I heard Peter Laviolette say today along those lines is sometimes you have to look past the final score, which is tough for a lot of fans especially, and for you guys as well. You want the result. You have to have the result a certain amount of times over 82 games. But he really liked the way you guys played for pretty much the whole game in Chicago, even though you came up with a hard luck overtime loss.
Yeah, we talked about that as a staff after the game, obviously. You know, it was a situation where we went into Chicago. We knew it was a team, obviously, that was thinking about, I'm sure they had that that game circled on their calendar in July when it came out, and we knew that. And I thought we responded very well. We came out and we played our game. I mean, I think the simplicity of our game, just, you know, making sure that we manage the puck. You know, we talk about that all the time and putting pucks in areas where we could get the puck back in the offensive zone. And one thing that we hadn't done well enough as a team, as a group up to that point was, you know, just the shot attempts, you know, putting pucks at the net. And I thought then the first period, especially, like we established that and put Chicago back on their heels a bit and force them to have to play defense. It all comes down to your puck decisions going through the neutral zone, because, you know, if you make the wrong decisions, and we talk about that all the time, you know, you're wasting energy playing defense. And then when you finally do get the puck, all you're looking to do is, you know, get it in deep and get off the ice because you have no energy left. So when you can make those good decisions through the neutral zone, it allows you to play your offensive zone game and allows you to have energy when you're in that zone.
You've got Colorado tonight, and Peter Laviolette said, hey, this is the game you have to be focused on because they look like they're a different team. And if your mindset is the Colorado of last year, because it's a lot of the same names, then you're in for trouble because they look like they're playing a lot more confidently and a lot more successfully.
Oh, definitely. I think obviously, you know, last year was a kind of a tough situation. They didn't hire their coach probably until maybe 2 or 3 weeks before the season. So that's pretty tough for a coach to come in and try to get his system in place and then get the players how they wanted them to play. And he had all summer to obviously get things together and get them playing the way he wanted them to play. And it's pretty obvious that they want to play that North game just like we do. They're a fast team. They built their team that way. They've got some excellent speed up front. You've got a couple of guys in the back end, Barry and Johnson, that are as good offensive guys as there is in the league. So, you know, they're after six games right now, they're number one in goals against 5-on-5. They've only allowed 3 goals. So, obviously, we know where we're at with our opponent, and our biggest thing tonight is to make sure we come in with the same mindset we had against Chicago and play that North game.
You called up Freddie Gaudreau, who's become a real popular guy among the fans because everybody loves the underdog, and what a great story he was in the postseason last year. But you've been watching him the last couple of years, and it looks like you guys have built a really good trust in him. Even though he's still a very young player, you feel like you can put him out there in pretty much any situation, any role.
Oh, definitely. I think that the Milwaukee coaching staff, they just rave about Freddie Gaudreau. You know, they love him. They say he's their smartest hockey player. You know, he's kind of like the Kelly Yarncroc of Milwaukee. And what I mean by that is his hockey IQ is off the charts. Like, he's a really smart player with and without the puck. He knows when to, get pucks deep. He knows when he has an opportunity to play offense. And I think with his ability to play center and wing, it just gives us a lot of options. And especially with Nick Bonino out now, you know, it gives us an option to put him at center ice and have 4 centermen playing tonight.
Another guy who's a newcomer I wanted to ask you about is Alexi Emelin, because it's always tough coming to a new team, but it looks like with each passing game, he's getting more comfortable out there.
Yeah, definitely. I think that, after the Pittsburgh game when he didn't play, I think he came back and with a great attitude and just went out there and played his game. Like, he's a simple player. He's not going to do anything flashy, but he's going to kind of reminds you of a Volchenkov type of player that we had here when we was paired with Seth Jones. I mean, he just does everything, the simple plays, and he gets pucks out, he gets pucks in. He's a physical guy. I think him and Subi have got a good chemistry going, and a lot of that was because they played together a little bit in Montreal, so there is that familiarity there. But I think since he's come back after that Pittsburgh game, he's played very well for us, and I think he's got a lot more confidence now, obviously, than he did at the start of the year.
You just said Subi. All right, we need to get this confirmed. We didn't bring this up yesterday, Willie. That's on me. I forgot to bring it up. We talked about him post-game on Saturday night. I think it was Colton Sissons. I don't remember the audio from the locker room. He referred to Samuel Girard as G. Is that what you guys are calling him, G?
Yeah, G is.
Is this kind of like Prince and Madonna? He's just got one one letter? It's just G?
That's it. You know, it's funny how guys get nicknames. And, Sam Girard, you can't really call him Girardi, where people just add a Y to his name. And so just a lot more.
Or Sammy. I thought maybe Sammy.
Yeah, yeah. So I think this, G is a good name for him.
Yeah.
He speaks to a couple languages too, so we're trying to keep it simple for him too.
Okay, so we have that confirmed. It's G. I like that.
Yeah.
Real quick, so Phil Housley leaves. He takes the head coaching job in Buffalo. How did that change your role, or did it?
Yeah, obviously, with Phil gone now, I switched. Now I'm working with the defense, and I'm very comfortable with that. I mean, if I had my decision, that's what I would love to do, because that's what I did my entire coaching career, other than the first time I was with Carolina with Paul Maurice, when they already had somebody there working with the defense. But since I've been with Lavi, I've always worked the defense, and up until I came to Nashville. And, obviously with Phil here, who did a great job, and, to me, to go with it, work with the forwards was not an issue. I've done that before, too, so... But if somebody gave me a choice, I would definitely like to work with the D, because, being a former defenseman, I think I can relate a lot better that way than I can with the forwards, because I never played that position.
Yeah. One thing we did talk about last year in the playoff run is you have to be careful on Lavi's pow punch. You have to where you're positioned on the bench. You don't want to be too close to him for the pow punch.
Yeah, you got to make sure, you got to know your distance.
Know his reach,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah. What's the old line there? Float like a butterfly, sting like a bee. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. And then when Ryan Johansson did it in the locker room, of course, that video went viral. That was classic. Hey, good to see you. Thanks for doing this.
Hey, no problem. Thank you.
Predators associate coach Kevin McCarthy. Good to see him as always. Predators and Avalanche tonight. Puck drop at 7. We'll have pregame starting at 6. More of 3D next. Well, you know, we go from Kevin McCarthy to David Kells. He's their man with the schedule of this arena. I mean, we're breaking down tonight's game with Kevin McCarthy. Now we're going to break down the schedule of the arena with the man who knows that better than anybody. David, how you doing?
Thanks for having me.
It's been a while.
Thanks for putting me on the spot, surprisingly.
I know. Will you stop by?
I stopped by to say hello.
Yeah.
And we call that spontaneity.
I like that. And that's the beauty of live radio.
Correct. Yes.
So you guys always have something going on.
Yep, yep.
So you're the man who has to, I have to believe, I can't keep up with it. It's your job to keep up with it. So you got hockey tonight. And then what do we have in store maybe the rest of the month, down the road?
Tomorrow night's Katy Perry. Then the Foo Fighters are on the 23rd. Kenny Rogers and Dolly Parton's last performance together here will be on the 25th. We roll into the weekend on October 29th. And then CM Awards on November 8th, and it just keeps going and going.
Yeah.
The big thing that we announced, I believe it was last Friday, was confirmed and announced, was the Country Rising benefit. It'll benefit the folks who were affected by the hurricanes and the tragic shootings in Las Vegas. That one goes on sale this Friday. And again, all proceeds or all funds for that one go to some really needy people.
And some of the stuff you told us during the break, can we say that on the air? I don't know if was secret, like Harlem Globetrotters.
Yeah, no, Harlem Globetrotters are coming back this January.
And with a twist.
Yeah, the demand has grown over the last several years, so now they're doing a double.
A double dip.
They'll do two shows in one day.
Very nice.
I don't know if they can win two games in a row. I've never seen that.
Their record's really good.
It's really good.
And then do they still play the Washington Generals?
The team name changed. I don't remember who it was last year.
Yeah, I don't believe it's the top of my head.
Everybody can always remember the first time they saw the Globetrotters. I can remember that.
Oh, it's an awesome show.
Yeah.
I mean,
you got to do that. That's one
correct.
Thing that you have to do in
as
your
a
life.
Family. You come and see the Globetrotters, and everybody has a great time. And is the bucket filled with water? Is it filled with confetti? You will never know until it's thrown on you.
So that's in January?
Yeah, that'll go on sale this week as well, and that's happening in January. So, yeah, we're busy. We keep rolling. And like I've said before, it's awesome, the fan reaction for the Predators and every event that comes in here. We would not be able to book as many shows if fans didn't come out and see the support. Success follows success. So after one or two or three tours, see how well Nashville is doing, we're on everybody's radar. So, you know, in the past, maybe we'd get the second leg of the tour. Well, now we get the first leg of the tour. In the past, maybe we'd only get one show. Where, you know, we had two shows with Ed Sheeran this year, two shows with Tim and Faith, two shows with Eric Church. People know they can come to Nashville. They know they can have a successful show, and they know the fans are going to come out and, you know, give that energy back to the performers.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because it's one thing for us to sit here and sing the praises, but you guys have been recognized, and this has been going on for a while, but it must be nice to get rewarded with the praise globally.
Yeah.
Because Bridgestone Arena is always up there, top five in the world. I mean, it's being recognized everywhere for what you guys are doing.
Actually,
all the events.
In town this week is the AIBA convention. So it's the International Entertainment Buyers Association. They all come in town. They look at potential artists to fill fairs and festivals and maybe arena rosters and all that kind of stuff. They see showcases. So a whole lot of my arena peers around the country, I've been given tours to Bridgestone Arena. And they're like, oh, my gosh, I can't believe you guys have that. Or, oh, my gosh, this place is so new and clean and modern. And how do you guys keep it up? And, you know, we just have a lot of good people who care and plan and keep up the effort
and
to make sure
it's good.
Put money
back into it.
Correct, yeah.
I mean,
yeah. That's what our stories have been also this summer. What we put another $6 million in this summer to upgrade restrooms and upgrade food and beverage options. It's all this one great big snowball because people can come here, have a good time, have a couple drinks with friends. They'll come back the next time. So because they come back, we get more events. Because we get more events, we can invest more into the building and on and on and on.
Holidays are always a big time too.
Yep.
The book stuff. People are looking for stuff to do around the holidays. Usually that's when you get some time off. Get to do something with the family. What do you guys got around the holidays? We already know because we've been giving away tickets on the show. if you don't have New Year's Eve plans,
yep,
you
Jimmy
can be
Buffett,
right here.
Jimmy Buffett and Huey Lewis on New Year's Eve is awesome. You know, we've had great shows the last couple of years. Year before was Widespread Panic. So yeah, this year is Jimmy Buffett and Huey Lewis. We also have just announced Cirque Musica is coming back. They were here last year. They have a holiday spectacular called Believe. So it's a good family-friendly, artistic, acrobats and music and comedy all kind of rolled into one family show. That one goes on sale this weekend, and the show is blank, dead radio, nobody likes it.
Well,
December
20th. Okay, and we're hoping during that time, this is our wish, that somewhere in that period of time that Ryan Ellis will be very close or maybe coming back into the lineup.
Yeah.
That's our vision.
What you did there.
That's
Willie
our
Donick.
Vision.
Very good.
Yeah.
Very nice.
Just hoping for that.
Well, for Jimmy Buffett, will you have a tattoo stand where people can put a new date on their body, because that's what they do, right?
If you'll
the
do
the parrot heads.
If you'll
oh,
do
no,
it, we'll bring in the tattoo
I got
artist.
No ink. I got no ink.
None?
None
yet.
You're not trained
none
in
yet.
That skill?
But I hear the parrot heads, they ink all their stops, right? All their.
I've not seen that.
Oh, yeah.
That's awesome.
I've heard.
You know a guy?
I've been told from the parrot heads that people have, like, all the shows that they've seen on
that's
their
really
body.
That's really cool.
Yeah, they're, like, hardcore.
Oh, yeah.
So I was just kind of throwing that out there. You might want to look into a tattoo stand.
Maybe. Excellent. Excellent.
And get the Nashville brand on there
yes.
before they
yes.
leave. Wow, well done, David.
Thanks, you guys.
Thanks for stopping by. Good to see you. We'll keep everybody posted. We'll do this again soon.
Yes, I'll pop by again. Thanks, y'all.
All right, thank you. David Kells, he is the man in charge, man. You're talking about a busy, busy schedule. This thing is always hopping. Always good to talk to him, and you just heard it. Here in the next couple of months, they'll be locked and loaded with shows, hockey games, shows, something always going on here. That's a good thing. Because,
lots
Willie,
of good stuff.
You remember back in the day, we used to sit here and look at the schedule
boy.
And be like, do they have anything scheduled for the arena?
Oh, this was a different time. That
was
a different time.
This was like about 12 years ago. We'd be like, I don't think they have an event this month on the books.
There was some documentation.
Remember the lockout?
Oh, boy.
We were like, I think the next event is December 14th at Sesame Street on ice. Remember, that's what we would sit here. I mean, it was.
There's a lot of blank dates.
People are laughing like, oh, you guys are just, that's for effect. No, that's true.
You got to love Kells, too. He's always, you know, he's got them all. He's got them going.
He's a mover and a
shaker. He rattles them off. It's incredible what they do. You know, we just talked about we're going to Madison Square Garden for the doubleheader on Saturday, but that's really what Nashville has become.
Mm-hmm.
Nashville and this building competes with Madison Square Garden
and the Staples Center.
Every year for the top
those
venues.
Are the three buildings in this country
yes
that everybody references
yep and that's pretty fast company
yeah I would say so. LA, New York City,
yeah.
Top two markets in the country,
yeah,
pretty legit.
That's legit.
And Nashville's in the same breath with them.
Yeah,
Bridgestone Arena, sure, that's pretty good. Coming up, we're not gonna have Derek Mason today in just a bit, but we are going to keep the theme because the consistency of you've been used to on this show hearing us talk about Vanderbilt football with the head coach in the last segment of the third hour every Tuesday. But today we'll talk to Mitch Light, who is with Athlon Sports and, of course, the sideline reporter for Vanderbilt football. And we'll just talk about, you know, where do they go from here? What do they need to do? This is a really good bye week because they need to, as we said yesterday, they need to hit the reset button.
No question. That's exactly the phrase I was going to use. It's time to hit the reset button and go back to square one and start building up, starting on defense, really, their identity back, because there's so much football left to be played. There's so much that can be accomplished. It was a very, very disappointing loss on Saturday. I don't think any, you know, they didn't have their weekly press conference today like they normally do. I'm sure Derek Mason would say he's very disappointed. But there's time. There's time to bring it back. There's a lot of football left.
Their defense has just fallen apart. I never thought we would ever say that. Not on Derek Mason's watch. I didn't think we would say that. It's fallen apart.
They've got to get back.
They can't stop anybody.
They've got to get it back. And it starts right in the trenches. Because that's what makes it tough. Is if you're physically getting beat, I don't know of a whole lot of schemes that you can do to mask it. But it wasn't happening last year. It wasn't happening early this year. So the question is, what do they have to do to get back into that?
Okay, you had TV meetings and then skate. So you, when you came back, we were into This Is What I Know, and you just heard Kevin McCarthy and David Kells. We've talked about it a bunch, but your reaction to last night was what?
Well, I thought,
as I said to Joe Rexroad, give me your capsule of last night.
My capsule would be that I liked how they didn't panic when they got behind, especially after the pick six, because that's when you easily could have had the demons creeping in, and you could have had, oh boy, here we go again with the Colts. But to their credit, they dug out of that hole and they got the job done. They're going to have to play better, I think, to get where they want to go, to win the division. What they did last night was not good enough to beat, I think, good teams in the league. But considering that they had the issue with Mariota, the fact that he got through start to finish, overcame the pick six, I thought was very impressive. I liked the game plan. I thought they protected him well. And I thought he showed me something that he could adjust his game and play hurt and get through it. I think that was a nice little stepping stone for him. And that's only going to help him going forward here. I would think that you probably have that same approach this week with a short week. You try to get through this Cleveland game, and then you got a time to rest, and hopefully he'll be a little healthier, a little more mobile later, and start working back into that thing. But, you know, the one thing I was concerned about, I think, more than anything else, is heat on the quarterback. I thought they had some. I would like to see more pressure on the quarterback, because that's not a very good offensive line. That's not a very good pass protection.
The Colts are supposed to be the team you can get to.
I thought they would be all over
Brissett.
But he had time, and, you know, they had, you know, for offense with not a whole lot of weapons, they had a fair amount of success. But, you know, if they punch it in from the red zone a few more times, you know, they probably, that may have been an easier game. So that's another thing is, and we've talked about this before, red zone is a little bit like the power play in hockey sometimes. Personnel doesn't change, but for whatever reason, it's hard to be great in the red zone every year. And that's definitely happening to the Titans right now. As good as they were in the red zone last year.
They were never going to be able to keep that pace
right
up. That,
but they've regressed to the mean.
Yeah. Jerry in Columbia. Jerry, what's up?
My main thing is, what happened to Vanderbilt, and have they just seemed to lost their confidence? The other thing is, the two main plays on Sunday, of course, the one that they called the touchback. Do you think that there's too many rules that hamper scoring?
All right, thank you, Jerry. I don't think anything is hampering scoring right now in college football other than...
Yeah, it's not an issue in the game.
It's not an issue at all. Offenses have huge advantages in football. It's not just on the college level, collegiate level. It's in the pros, too. I don't believe that's an issue. I brought up this yesterday, and I'll say it to Mitch Light when we talk to him next. I don't know why or how this happened. Vanderbilt cannot tackle. They are a poor, and I mean poorest, tackling team. And the one thing that even jumps out even more than that is not only can they not tackle, they get run over. I mean, in position right there to make the tackle and just get run over. I mean, when I saw Patterson run over two defenders to get in the end zone, I mean, the quarterback is not supposed to be bowling over people, and that's what he did. And it happens. It's been happening in this stretch run of four games.
I think, and that's not, again, something that I had thought was an issue. But there's two parts to that. Number one, I do think there's the form of the tackling. It's got to be better. But something that doesn't help is when the runner has got a full head of steam going through that first level of the defense. The runner, if you haven't been touched through the first level, it makes it harder for the guy on the second level to tackle you. So that's part of the problem. Nobody is, you know, slowing down the runner often enough, you know, to on the initial play. The guy's blowing through a huge hole.
I realize Alabama and Georgia have really good running backs. I get that. But like I said, in this four-game stretch of Alabama and Florida and Georgia and Ole Miss, just too many times I'd see Vanderbilt defenders in position, and the next thing you know, whoever has the ball.
They just keep going.
Nobody is getting even slow. It doesn't even look like they're getting slowed down. It's like a little speed bump, and they just keep going, and the Vanderbilt defender's rolling around on the ground, and they're off to whatever, 5, 10, 15, 20 yards, or even a touchdown.
That was the nightmare that had happened against Ole Miss, who has not been a great team. Now, Ole Miss has got some talented players, and every team that you play in the league has got some talented players. But to give up 57 was, wait a minute, that's not so – I could deal with it with Alabama. I can deal with it with Georgia. You know, they played respectably at Florida, even though they weren't great. But to have that happen at Ole Miss, that was tough. But this is another thing we'll talk to Mitch about. How much will the bye week, just from a mental and physical rest standpoint? Because I think maybe they were worn down a bit.
Just the defense being on the field
so much. Part of it's their own fault, but they just – you know, maybe just worn down.
Yeah. Well, it's going to be – they need to hit the reset button because it's going to be critical, as we'll talk next. At South Carolina, hosting Western Kentucky, Kentucky, Missouri. Three straight home games, and then in Knoxville to face Tennessee for their final five games. This is going to be a critical stretch to their season to wrap up the regular season. We'll come back and talk about that with Mitch Light from Athlon Sports. He also does the sidelines for Vanderbilt Radio. I want to talk to you about the good folks at the Vein Center. A lot of you, or some of you out there, may be dealing with this for the first time, or maybe you've been dealing with tingling or numbness in your arms or your legs or your hands or your feet, and this is all something new, or more signs that something could be wrong. Maybe you've been dealing with leg cramping or weakness or cold limbs or limbs changing color, and you're like, what in the heck is going on? Well, what you don't want to do is dismiss this. You don't want to say, I'm just getting older, or that's arthritis, or no big deal, it'll go away. No. Let these guys at the Vein Center, who specialize in comprehensive vein health, not just cosmetic treatments, let them get in there and see what in the heck is going on. Because these problems could cause vein issues, and you don't want that happening. So if you have heaviness and aching in your legs by the end of the day, these are the folks that you need to call. That number, 615-269-9007, 269-9007. And one thing that you're going to find out is just how invested these folks are in this community. You say, well, what's the big deal about that? Well, the big deal is their three locations. They have over 30 doctors. These folks all live here. They don't just come here and specialize. No, they live here, and they are invested in this community, and you'll find out how passionate they are about this, because this is not really common ground. A lot of you, like I said, may be experiencing this and going, this is kind of weird, but it'll go away. No, not the case. Also, keep in mind, most procedures covered by insurance. Those three convenient locations, Belle Mead, Cool Springs, and Mount Juliet. I spoke with Dr. Kaiser at the Bellamy store. They've got Dr. Snyder, Dr. Edwards, Dr. Lee, littered with doctors at all three locations. You can also check out their website to get a full list of their doctor names and everything about them. VeinReliever.com. It's VeinReliever.com. If you've been experiencing any of this, go see the specialized and certified surgeons at the Vein Center. You know, you would think with our next guest that Willie would be telling me all the things that we're going to talk to him about on the Vanderbilt side of things. Mitch Light from Athlon Sports, Vanderbilt sideline reporter. But no, all Willie could talk about, Mitch, during the break was how he beat you in fantasy football this week.
As I explained to Willie via text, it's very difficult to win your fantasy game when A, your team stinks, and B, you remember at 12:25 that you haven't set your lineup yet.
Oh boy.
So, you know, if Willie needs to gloat, if that's what he needs to feel good about himself, I'm like a equivalent of an NBA team that's tanking and didn't tell the guys what time that like the game started, so half my roster wasn't even there. So, Willie, congratulations to you.
The Colts sucked for luck. What are you doing? What are you sucking for?
Lack of interest, I think.
Okay, yeah, you sound a little bitter about your team.
I'm not that into it to begin with, and it's not that good to begin with. So I thought you were wanted to talk Yanks-Indians series recap, but we can do that another time.
I've already made it in the last hour. My MLB postseason tank is empty. It's just empty. I just can't pick myself up off the mat. I have not watched Strohs, Yanks, Dodgers, Cubs. I can't do it right now. The tank's empty.
I don't blame you. I mean, MLB postseason's exhausting, and the game's last.
It really
forever.
Is.
Each pitch is excruciating, and if you're watching your team, you're invested so much. Like, I'm not watching the National League. Like, I watch every pitch of the Yankees, and like, I just don't. You know, I'll check on the scores, but it's hard to devote that much time to watching baseball to begin with, and then I don't have the energy to do it.
I'll be like Dabo Swinney. I'm going to go over to your locker room right now, Mitch Light, and I'm going to congratulate you. I'm going to be like Dabo.
Thank you. It's nice when a small market team like the Yankees can get a young group together like this and find a way to win some games.
Okay, let's move on. All right, something else I've been talking about. I want to get your perspective because you're down there on the sidelines every game. You see it up close and personal. I never thought I would say this about a Derek Mason defense, because we've spent so much time praising since he took over the reins on that side of the ball and how good they've been. That's been really like the least of their worries. Mitch, yep. This team can't tackle, and this team gets run over. I mean, they need to hit the weight room. I've never seen a team that gets bowled over so much than Vanderbilt's defense. What is going on? They can't stop anybody right now.
Yeah, I think the tackling is a good point, and that's something that the coaching staff and Derek Mason has been preaching to his guys, you know, basically starting with the Alabama game. It's difficult for me to sit here and say I didn't play the sport, but I can imagine when you play a team like Alabama and they're so quick, big, and strong, maybe you fall into some bad habits. And Norman Jordan on our broadcast who's watching the games from up in the press box, has said repeatedly, you know, last month that he sees Vanderbilt guys kind of leaving their feet to make tackles, which is, you know, fundamentally not what you're supposed to do. So that's been an issue. I know Derek Mason's frustrations have been with sort of alignment, breakdowns, and tackling, which are three basic things that, you know, you need to do to have a good defense. So, yeah, I mean, it's been, you know, basically ever since the Kansas State game, it's been bad on defense. You know, the Florida game, look what Florida did, 34 points, whatever the score was there.
38,
Florida struggled in its other games. And Ole Miss is actually a really talented offensive team. Shea Patterson's good, and the wide receivers, I think, are the best in the SEC. But that doesn't, you know, 57 points is a whole different matter. So, yeah, it's obviously the number one issue with this team right now, because they're good enough offensively. They've made enough progress offensively to win some games. But defense is not getting it done. And Willie, I don't know if you remember me saying, I think I sat with you guys or was on, I had a feeling, a suspicion over the summer that this team might be better offensively than defensively, and I didn't know if that was a good thing or a bad thing. Right now, it's a bad thing.
Yes, I do remember that.
Hmm. I remember this time last week asking Coach Mason, you're very good about, you know, your speeches and your message, and these kids have bought into your message, but you've gone through a difficult stretch and they've been beat down. How do you mentally get them up? I remember asking him that very question last week, and it looks abundantly clear. This bye week could not come at a better time, because I think there is some real mental fatigue after this stretch that they've had over the last four or five games.
Yeah, and I interviewed Ralph Webb at the post-game locker room, and it's not an ideal place to – you know, get the best answers. It's right after the game in the locker room. There's a lot of people around, but I asked him about the mental. You know, you can look at the stretch of playing four top 25 teams, or at the time they were ranked in the top 25 and going on the road. You know, obviously that's physically difficult to do, but how difficult is it, you know, mentally? And he kind of just, you know, brushed it off, saying you got to be ready to play every game, which is obviously true. But it's a grueling sport, and, you know, it's
when things aren't going well, it makes it even more difficult. So I agree, Darren. You know, this, you know, you could argue that they really could have used the break after the Georgia game and kind of reset for the stretch drive. That obviously wasn't the case. So I'll be interested to see after a week off, you know, if they're refreshed and rejuvenated defensively, because obviously they need to play much better to win some games.
Mitch Light is the college football editor at AthlonSports.com, also the sideline reporter on Vanderbilt's radio for football. And so, Mitch, where do you think they start? This is, you know, you have an opportunity now to reset, and you've got a lot of games down the stretch here that, you know, if Vanderbilt plays the best that they have played, you got to feel like they're going to be in all of them. There's still a lot you can accomplish. So where do you think Derek Mason starts?
Great question. I mean, I think a lot of it is with the tackling. And I asked Warren Phelan, the linebackers coach, last week in a pregame interview, you know, is there a lot you can do during the week, during the season to practice tackling? Because you hear a lot of football people say, you know, with the rules now and there's less full contact and practice, you know, sometimes that's what, you know, teams struggle with. But he said, sure, there's things you can do, fundamentals, drills and all that stuff. So they've got to tackle better. I think they've had some – you know, they've had obviously had some communications issues. I don't know if you guys saw the game.
Yeah, a couple blown coverages where a guy pops wide.
Ryan White, a fifth-year senior who I think is, you know, one of the best players on this team, was out with an injury, and they had a redshirt freshman in who missed some calls. There was some miscommunication. They're not saying that they would have stopped that possession, but obviously when you let a guy break free 30 yards behind the defense, that makes it a lot easier. So I think there's some things there, and there seem to be some alignment issues too. You know, you saw it first in the Georgia game with teams going quickly and trying to get the calls in, you know, getting the defensive line in the right position too. So, I'm just interested to see because, you know, this team started the season so strong. You know, Middle Tennessee, we all agree that at full strength, that's a really good offensive team, and Kansas State's struggled lately, but they've been without Jesse Earth, their starting quarterback. So it wasn't like they just piled up big, solid defensive numbers against some really bad teams. There is something there on that defense. I'm sure it's obviously not as good as the numbers indicated early, and hopefully it's not as bad as the numbers indicate in these last five games.
Where do you see the offensive line play at this point? I know that's something that Derek Mason was troubled with during that rough stretch. Last week, they popped some big runs. Ralph Webb's numbers looked a little bit better. They did score 35 points. So are they making progress there?
I think they are. And they through the first four games, they were rotating guards. Basically, you know, they had four guys. They were looking for the right combination. And I don't know if they settled on, you know, Sage Young at left tackle and E.J. Delarippa at right left guard and right guard as the best, like how much separation there is. But at some point, 3 weeks ago, they decided they've got to stick with five guys, and that's what they've had. So they've had the same guards, same tackles, and then Bruno Reagan at center the last three games, just hoping to get some continuity on the offensive line. And for the most part, I thought the offensive line's done a decent job protecting Kyle Shermer this year, but struggled in the run blocking. Last week, as you mentioned, Willie, it was the best they've done run blocking, first play of the game. Ralph Webb springs for a long run. His numbers were really good, but they had trouble protecting Kyle Shermer. Now, Ole Miss is, they're not a very good defensive team, but they've got some quick defensive linemen. Maybe that was some of the problems. Maybe they need to max protect more. But I do think there's been some progress there, and I think that was, you know, that was a good sign that for the first time this year, they were able to open some holes for Ralph Webb. So I would expect this group of five to, you know, remain the starters and just, again, hope to establish more continuity as the season progresses.
Mitch, one on basketball. I know you follow this, and this is obviously a huge story for the coming weeks, but I know how a lot of Vanderbilt fans have been following the recruitment of Darius Garland, and he's such a great story, great player that's getting attention from all around the country. Any feel right now on the vibe of Vanderbilt's chances?
I mean, I think they remain pretty strong. You know, went on his official visit to Kentucky last weekend. I think he's still planning on going to Indiana in UCLA, but all of the, you know, so-called recruiting experts and others would definitely put Vanderbilt in the lead for Darius Garland. And the exciting thing for Vanderbilt, there's other prospects. You know, if Darius does, in fact, decide to commit to Vanderbilt, there's other guys, other top 15 type guys that might follow. So it's a, you know, they've got one commitment, a wing player from South Carolina, but they've got some other scholarships open that they're obviously hoping Darius Garland takes. So it'll be a interesting next month, I guess, signing days in early November. So it could be some good news for Vanderbilt. But obviously, when you're competing against schools like Kentucky, Indiana, UCLA, you know, nothing's done until that fact
right.
comes through.
It's the Yogi Berra. It's not over until it's over. What did you think that the fact that he decided to not take the visit to Duke, was that a positive for Vanderbilt?
Well, you know, it's funny because this, you know, Vanderbilt's been recruiting Darius Garland since his freshman year, and Kevin Stallings, you know, was here. And all along, the word in the street, you know, I just know from talking to others, I don't know the kid at all, but was that, you know, he was kind of enamored with Duke, and if Duke ever offered, they'd be tough to beat. And then, you know, they offered, and all along it was Vanderbilt and Duke seemed to be there. And then for whatever reason, maybe it was they got another commitment from another point guard, but even after that, they seemed to still be in the mix. You know, about a month ago, seemingly, they just agreed to break up, so to speak, you know, that he wasn't going to visit there. So if you would have told me 3 months ago that he wasn't going to visit Duke and Duke was out of the equation, I would have said, sure, Vanderbilt's in great shape. But it appears that Indiana maybe has been the kind of replaced Duke as the other competitor for Vanderbilt. So I wasn't surprised when he didn't visit Duke because I'd heard, you know, that Indiana was in the mix as well.
On the way out, we were lobbying for you to get some new swag last time you spoke with us. Did you get any? Did Vanderbilt hook you up or no?
I did not, Darren. Evidently, Dang you do it. Not carry the influence that you
wow.
think you do.
Mm.
So I'll just leave it at that. You know,
I'm gonna have to.
He's
what
not
I'm gonna have to do
that.
Is I'm gonna have to take some measures behind the scenes. Then I'm gonna have to set up some private meetings. I thought on air would work, but clearly I need to take it to the next level.
That's obvious, and hopefully we can get this done because you know it's getting a little chillier now.
It is getting chillier. Yes.
I'm gonna need an extra layer.
Okay. All right. I'll work on that. Thanks as always, Mitch.
Thanks, guys.
Mitch Light, Athlon Sports sideline reporter for Vanderbilt. Fourth and final hour of 3D, including an announcement we'll make right from the top. You're going to want to hear this. We want to congratulate somebody, someone who's part of our broadcast team. We'll do that next on 3D.